This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 269, COVID Data. Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm now taking Michael's way to start the show. It's Michael Martin, joined by Michael Rowe and Andy Piper for another edition of Games at Work.biz. Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Hello! I am fine. How are you, Andy?
Doing well. Just had a four-day week over here in the UK. We got a little national holiday on Monday, so rolling into the conclusion and trying to keep up with all the tech news, which never stops.
It never stops, which is a good thing, because what else would we do without good tech news?
I mean, we might have a very short show, and this may be a short show anyway, not because of the lack of tech news, just because of the lack of time today. But yeah, we've got plenty to talk about regardless.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We certainly do. And we've got a few stories that started up from a COVID perspective last week that carried forward into this week. And actually, it's kind of good that we waited on them, because there's even more insight around them to discuss. So last week, there was an announcement from our friends in Cupertino and Mountain View about doing contact tracing using Apple and Google and cell phones. And I was rather intrigued by the simplicity and the privacy elements that have been built into this proposal across Android and iOS devices. And the article that I found that I wanted us to chat a little bit about is where the European Union, from a data privacy perspective, GDPR, et cetera, are certainly and understandably wanting to make sure there's a good understanding of how the private and public keys are going to be used to share data between devices, and how this can be done in a way that's consistent with GDPR. Gents, you know, the way that it's explained looks very, very simplistic and easy to understand about how someone who might be diagnosed with the virus and then be able to upload and substantiate that information. And then, because of proximity detection and key generation, that the extent of the contacts that you might have had during an exposure period could be signaled and have the opportunity to get themselves tested too.
Yeah, what's really interesting about this, I find, is the perspective on that they've provided this service, and they haven't provided a service, right? What they've done is they've provided APIs and capabilities so somebody could create a service, right? I don't think either of them are actively releasing a new app or a new feature to allow you to contact trace people. What they've done is they've provided APIs that will provide the service that somebody can develop around it. And there was a really good long discussion on Steve Gibson's Security Now this past week, where he actually went through and described what those APIs are doing and how the privacy and security angle works. And my gut reaction when I first started hearing the stories and everybody kind of freaking out to some degree was, it can't be that bad, but, you know, I'm not going to put it on my phone. And, well, there's nothing to put on your phone because it's API level stuff. And actually, the technology, the approach, the architecture, the APIs, the encryption, the forward knowledge only capability, right? You can't reverse engineer the way it's structured to get back to the identifying data, right? Is really, really impressive. The concerns that I've heard most well expressed this week is the way the system is set up, or will be set up, the way the APIs are structured, is you have to somehow say, I've tested positive.
Right.
Okay. That trigger event will then allow for the tracing of the data that uses non-personally identifiable information that rotates on a periodic basis, and it's on multiple different periods, so you can't just line up all the periods and then figure out the data also, in order to say, hey, this device passed within this distance, BTLE distance, of a device that has been declared as being carried by somebody who has tested positive, right? And so the worry is that bad actors, or, I mean, let's face it, just kids screwing around, will turn on their flag and say, hey, I've tested positive, and then go walking around people to send bad signals in the data. That's I think, a more worrisome aspect. I think the privacy and the security angle was actually very, very well structured, at least from what I've read and what I heard. And I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about bad actors doing something with it to make it so that people then can't trust the data.
But I'm not sure I fully understand, even though I'm in tech myself, I'm not sure I fully understand all of the aspects here. As you say, Michael, these are APIs that are being jointly created between Apple and Google, and therefore sharing the same or similar privacy perspectives on how the data is being treated and how it's being generated and the traceability down to an individual. The one thing I think I take issue with is you're saying it's not an app. No, it's not an app from Apple or Google. It's a set of APIs from Apple or Google. But in the case of the UK, they are, the NHS is saying, well, there is a statement I've read or a story I've read this week, which was saying that the NHS will be building this into their app in order to enable this functionality. Now, the question, as you say, then is, can that possibly be hijacked? It seems like the two parties that are building the back ends are doing as much as they possibly can in the right possible way to lock that down, and that's useful. And hopefully that will alleviate some of the international concerns about that, supranational, I should say, is the correct terminology, supranational concerns around how that data is being used. There were a ton of things that we saw this week around COVID, and I think we're probably going to put most of those into the show notes rather than go through them all in detail, because we don't want to spend our entire time on this show talking about something where we've got so many other things that we could be talking about as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And
are there any other things we want to definitely hit on before we move to the next topic?
Well, the next couple, I think we'll leave them for the show notes too. There's some interesting mapping examples, and there's some interesting, folded at home examples and other things like that. So let's have you check into the show notes so you'll get a chance to see all those. One that is tangential to where we are with COVID, and that's mostly because people are having to work from home and connect with other people, is an article about something called Online Town. And this is, I think, exactly in our sweet spot for this particular podcast, because one of the things that it tends to do is it gives a sense of place where a Zoom or a WebEx or a Skype or whatever kind of virtual and teleconference, video conference you're doing, you don't have a sense of place. Or people are, putting up a background that might show them at the beach or, somewhere other than where they are. But the intriguing thing about Online Town, when I saw this article, was that it allows for a way for you to walk away from a meeting and then have a sense of place where another meeting might be happening. And for anyone who plays games, this is almost a Zelda-esque kind of way of knowing where the place is that you're going.
Michael, what was that tool? And gosh, it was 3, maybe 4 years ago. I know I was using it and got you to use it and a couple other people, where you basically had an office or a building with a door, and you could go in that, and that meant you were unavailable. If you opened the door, people could walk in and set up, a dynamic audio or video meeting. It this seems like taking that and expanding it out to a space, a town, for non-business usage.
It does. And Andy, for your purposes, I can't remember the name of it right offhand either, yeah. Michael. But
somewhere I have the account still.
it was, and I'm sure I do too. It was a concept of how can you show that you are co-working with others mm-hmm. virtually, right? Yep. So there's like a map of an office. And if you were in one particular spot, you're available for interruption. And if you are not available for interruption, you could go into a private spot, which would be visible to other people that you're working. You just can't be bothered right now, which I guess so I feel like that a lot.
This is all making me flash back to a much earlier iteration, which both of you will be very familiar with, which was something called Second Life.
Oh, yes.
Where we did this, you know,
all the time
quite frequently, you know, you could walk away from a gathering and indicate, therefore, that you weren't part of that gathering. And you could, at the later phases of its evolution, do the kind of the voice within a particular range. Mm-hmm. I find this very interesting, and I'm going to have to go and have a play with this. I like the kind of idea of this map where you can move around. It's kind of a top down, very old style Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2 kind of map. Yep. You can walk around, hopefully do nothing that you might have encountered in a Grand Theft Auto game, but
or even Game Boy Pokemon for that matter, Andy.
Right, yeah. Absolutely, yes, that's a much better analog. Well done.
Yeah, I mean,
back down to the family friendly level,
and that was exactly why this reminded me of that other tool from a few years back, because it was that same kind of top down map view. With a little bit more 3D on the other one, but almost the exact same thing, and the use case seems identical. So I like it, and I'm going through my 1Password history because I had to set up an account that would have been stored here, trying to find it.
And any luck yet?
No, because I've got 1,500 passwords.
Yeah. One of the C also link in this story, for me at least, and I don't know if they change it up for different interests, is check out this other open source alternative to Zoom called Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I.
Yeah.
And we actually tried that, my friends and I, on Wednesday evening here mm-hmm. for our regular Wednesday evening social. It's an open source alternative. Seemed to work quite well. In most contexts.
Yeah, I've been wondering about that. I was tempted to set one up and see if I could run it on either my NAS or on my on a Raspberry Pi. I didn't know what the horsepower requirement was.
We were just doing it as clients, so I don't know where the server was or what it was doing with our data, which is probably a bit worrying, and that's a statement to say. But
yeah, well, I understand you can build your own own server really easy, is what I understood, which is what I figured would be kind of cool about it, but yeah. Nice. We'll have to check it out.
Moving along to another combination of physical virtual representation, again, back from the gaming side of things. And this particular example reminds me of a number of different gaming mats, and the three-dimensional one, Michael, you brought up on a recent show here too, where you can interact with your space. This particular mat is called Proxy Mat, and it is a description of, at least from the title here, talks about how it evolved to help people, esports athletes and others, be able to control their environment much more than you can with just hand driven or keyboard driven controls. And so you've got a mat on the ground and a space that you can interact with it. And it's not like Dance Dance Revolution. It's not like, you know, some of these other things, but it's yet another way to experience a virtual world space. And given the fact that so many people are cooped up and contained right now in an apartment or a house or wherever they may be, things like this for movement and for getting around are even more important. It reminded me also a little bit of the Wii experience from years ago too, from an exercise perspective, where you would be able to interact and the Wii would respond to you about your fitness levels related to this.
Yeah, I think any of these devices that can help extend the reality, right? And to provide additional data into the simulation, whether that's a game or exercise or just a virtual meeting space, really help drive the value and the immersion of the environment. So yeah, this one's cool. I haven't had a chance to look at the proxy mat in detail, but yeah, I might have to take a look at it. It looks like you can buy it right now.
Yeah, it does.
And it's very inexpensive, relatively speaking. $50 to $60.
I mean, that could easily have been the kind of place that the Wii Fit balance board could have gone should Nintendo have kept up with those kind of resources. They obviously do have the Fit for the Switch, which works differently, works on the band rather than on the standing on a board. But there are so many ways that you can take physical inputs these days through different devices. Lower down that same article that we're discussing, there's a video of the Tilt Brush from Google, which uses a VR helmet, and that's very cool. I've used that with some Samsung hardware in the past, or as a very similar situation using open web standards to do something similar with 3D painting. And that when I did it a few years ago was early days, but these things just become increasingly immersive and interesting as control methods and ways of interacting.
You know, so speaking of, you know, being in an immersive world, kind of like with Tilt Brush, the next article I found particularly intriguing because we've talked on more than one occasion about how a virtual space can get really, really noisy due to advertising and other things. But this particular example, it's called HoloSwitch. What it does is it allows you, while you're in a virtual reality space, to get notifications that you choose and that you prioritize to come up and notify you in the virtual space. So you might be playing a game, you might be in a meeting, and if you're getting a text from your family member and you need to know about it, it does this in a the way it describes it, it's rather unobtrusively, but within your field of vision and a very natural VR, AR type of experience in my mind.
So I have a confession to make. When I first saw this article, I just glanced at the title. I didn't have time to look at it in detail this morning. And I was like, HoloSwitch? Who's going to use HoloLens on a Switch?
Who's going to switch to a...
And so I was, once I read through it, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's you know, it's now about bringing the outside world into the virtual world that you're in. And that's, you know, I mean, many of the AR apps, when you look at those, the ability to provide key information within context is valuable. And here, you know, you could be having a good time in HoloLens, having a game, playing whatever, and someone's texting you saying, hey, you know, you got 5 minutes and we've got to leave. So that would be good information to have.
My counterpoint to your question about HoloLens and Switch is if Microsoft and Nintendo keep getting as close as they have been in terms of sharing things, and Microsoft being as cross-platform increasingly as they have been, then it may not be that long. But who knows?
It would be kind of nice. News.
We have no news to share here today.
Today.
maybe later, maybe at another time.
It'll be exclusive on our show.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Well, so Michael, you made the point of this is bringing the outside world into a virtual world. You know, you found an article around World Gaze that is taking the outside world and interacting with it in a way that lets you do something special and different.
Yeah, this really was exciting to me, and I'm going to digress for 30 seconds. A year ago, I think it was a year ago, Apple showcased the Filmic app being able to do some really cool things using both the front and the back camera on the phone at the same time and allowing you to do some really neat ways of editing video and splicing stuff together and doing like an interview where you have the person talking through the camera or through the phone to the other person, but you have the ability to do that two-shot video, right? So what this is actually is an application or a capability called World Gaze that allows the front and back camera to be used to provide where your field of vision is and to get information on the back camera and use that information and then transform it into relevant data for you on the screen of the phone while it looks at where your eyes are gazing. So it's, again, using both sides of the cameras on a mobile device, and then, you know, changing the way mobile assistants work. I thought this was really, really cool use of that ability and the power of the multi-cameras nowadays in phones.
Agreed. But it has the same challenge that AR on a phone has for a long time, which is you got to hold the phone out in front of you so you can really take advantage of the camera. And as we get the cameras in different places.
Contact lenses.
And spiders.
Touche.
Identify the kind of spider that it's crawling towards me, please, Siri.
How badly
I will die when it crawls into my face.
I saw an article this week about scientists having to take their research tarantulas home.
Well, hopefully they didn't put them on to any comestibles such as pizza.
Oh, yes.
Michael, you got very excited about this article about the pizza oven.
Yeah, yes. So absolutely. I've heard of various different Kickstarters which promise the ability to make pizza at home at the same quality as a pizzeria, and this device looks amazing. And I mean, the reviews are hit and miss, more hit than miss, but it actually will. It uses a propane tank and a metal structure and a, I want to say, stone base to get up to 800 plus degrees fairly quickly as a baking surface so that you can make pizza at home that is equivalent, quote unquote, to a pizzeria. And that's so much better than, you know, waiting for a delivery that comes late and that's cold and chewy. And I just thought, you know, while we're all sitting at home, this would be a great thing to have. I don't have one yet.
Well, we are having pizza this evening, homemade. Ooh. So I'm looking forward to doing that in a few short moments.
Oh, cool. That'll be super tasty. What is your favorite toppings for the pizza? What are you having on it?
Pepperoni, but it's I think it's a sausage one tonight, which is also a great sounding option.
Spicy sausage or mild sausage?
Well, it'll be mild. It'll be mild. I like pepperoni's as spicy as I get.
Okay.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
Well, team, I think that's what we have time for today. Check out the show notes. Tons of links, lots of things to discuss. Send us what you're seeing. Send us what you're reading about. And we'll do our best to bring them in for the next edition of Games at Work.
.biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.